Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Norm Clark, who discusses his new book, Vegas Confidential, Sensational Celebrity Tales, published by Stevens Press. In the weeks to come, we have Meryl Marco, Anne Brashears, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute. It's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. On behalf of the Tattered Cover, I'd like to thank you for being here tonight on this holiday Monday. I know it's the only good thing about it, having to come out tonight, other than Norm, is the free parking. So I hope you all got free parking on the street. During his 15 years in Denver, Norm Clark was a baseball writer, a sports columnist, and a man about town columnist. A former reporter of the year at the Rocky Mountain News, Norm joined the Las Vegas Review-Journal in 1999 to write his column, Vegas Confidential, which covers one of the hottest gossip beats in the world. Not hotter than Denver, surely. He is here tonight to sign his second tell-all book about Vegas. There is just so much to tell, I'm sure. Vegas Confidential, Sensational Celebrity Tales. Please join me in welcoming Norm Clark.
Thank you, Heather, and thank you all for coming out tonight. I thought that you guys might be braving some kind of bad weather, but I think you're warmer than Las Vegas is tonight. That's not saying much. I have to tell you that about a month ago, I went back, my girlfriend and I went back to Lincoln, and we left, and it was like 2 or 3 inches of snow on the ground in Las Vegas. We get back there, and there's like 5-10 inches of snow on the ground, 10 below. We spend a week, we come back, and it's 30 degrees in Vegas, and it's suddenly 61 degrees in Lincoln. So there's definitely something weird, really weird, going on in the world. But I'm not here to give you a weather report tonight. I wanted to again thank you for coming out with all the things that there is to do. The book is obviously called Sensational Celebrity Tales. And I can tell you right now, it would be a bestseller, but for one thing. If I named it The Chemically Misguided, I'd have a bestseller, without a question. But I like my job, and I like my life, and I didn't want to spend the rest of it in litigation. So I decided that I would kind of stay within the bounds there's some very litigious folks in Los Angeles that watch out for their clients, and so this is what we have. It basically is chronicles the my 10 years in Las Vegas, and I got there and really caught a wave. Las Vegas was just really taking off when I got there. The building boom was way underway. I got there in 99. I guess because I love history so much, that was obviously a part of the reason I went there, but the other part was I wanted to be able to report on Vegas going into the millennium. I thought that would be a really cool thing. And as it turned out, it was fun to be there. But what I didn't really realize is that was kind of my starting point, and it'll be a full 10 years come September. But this starts with one thing. Talk about a happy accident. The very first page, we start with Chapter 1 is Hey Big Spender, and it begins, "The Gilded Age of Las Vegas arrived about the same time as boxer Floyd Mayweather Jr. He stood out as the perfect poster child for a wild spending era that makes the roaring 20s look tamer than a church social." We came up with a photo of all photos in the book. Floyd Mayweather arriving at Tris nightclub with $10,000 in one hand, 10,000 in another, and twice a week he goes out and throws his money away. Except for the last 3 months, we haven't seen much of him out. And but that's it, it's amazing that we couldn't have really picked out anything that would quite been as appropriate as what Las Vegas was in the new millennium. It was about excess to the max. It was about people that I mean, I can't tell you about the misbehavior. I can't even begin to go into that. But we had Britney Spears, who was under the influence of something, got married for a minute. She got married at 4 a.m. and annulment was underway by 3 p.m. She had, I walk into 9 Steakhouse now and I show friends 2 tables. The first table, when you walk in on the left, is where Pete Rose bitch slapped me. Then I turn and point to the next table is where Britney Spears had her wedding / annulment dinner. And that's the Vegas thing that's going on. I mean, it's Vegas baby, and it constantly manifests itself in all sorts of incredible readable ways. I want to tell you that when I left here, and people often ask me, why would you leave the Rocky Mountain News? You knew the city. I'd been here 15 years. I had a really nice little niche cut out. I got to be the Man About Town columnist. I was a former sports writer. Loved everything about what I did. But my brother's been the photographer. He's now chief photographer, actually runs the department. He's been there for 20-some years. And I can't tell you how many times we would talk once a week, and he would say, so what's new? And I'd say, I had a pretty good story this week. John Elway didn't go back with the Broncos to meet Clinton because he was upset about something. And I think that was a pretty good little item. And my brother would trump me, triple me on this happened last week, this happened. And he would always end it, well, we don't have a column like yours, so none of this gets in the paper. And he just hit me in the heart. I thought, that's just not even believable that the Las Vegas Review-Journal and the Las Vegas Sun neither have a gossip columnist or man about town columnist, if you will. And I saw my future. I just sort of thought that would really be cool if I could get that job. And so I talked to I sent a note to the to the publisher of the paper. He said, I've got a 20-minute window. Why don't you stop in on my, I was back there to see my brother's for my brother's housewarming party. He said, I've got a 20-minute window on Monday. Please stop in. And that told me that I was basically getting lip service. I think he thought that I was trying to use my meeting with the Review Journal to maybe get a raise at the Rocky Mountain News. But I walked in, and I knew that things had turned when, after an hour and 50 minutes, he said, well, if you're serious about this, we could make this happen very fast. And I said, well, I'm totally serious about this. I think you might be thinking that I'm using this to maybe go in and get a raise out of this, but, you know, that's not the case. To me, this I think I could turn this job into one of the top three best-read gossip columns, if you want, celebrity / entertainment / man about town, whatever. And what he had hoped for but didn't verbalize was that I would come in and that something would happen, some sort of critical mass would happen where the word would get out and that the column would get popular. Well, I was maybe 2 or 3 years into it, And I was having lunch one day with some friends, and my cell phone rang, and I hear the voice, Norm, this is Matt Drudge. I'm in town. Can I get you on my radio show on Sunday night? And I went, sure. And I was getting up from the table because I was sure I was being punked. And I walked away from the table, and there was like this pause. And I thought it was somebody was sitting at the table had set up somebody to call me to say that. So for those of you who aren't aware of Matt Drudge, he runs I think it's easily the most read internet news site maybe in the world. I think it's multi-millions a day. And he said, I'm picking up a vibe here that maybe you're not interested, i.e. a Democrat, because Matt's quite a Republican. And I said, no, Matt, I'm sorry for the delay in responding to you, but I was sitting with some friends, and I have some friends who think it's very funny to call me with Elvis voices, who call me with all sorts of impersonations. I've never had a Matt Drudge call yet, so I don't know for sure if this is you, but I'm going to take a chance that it is. And he goes, I've been in town for 2 weeks. I just want you to know that as of about 20 minutes ago, we put you on the site. I should have had you on the site several years ago. How come you didn't call me and bug me? And I said, well, the fact is, I wanted to. I thought about it. But I didn't want it to happen. I wanted it to happen organically as opposed to browbeating you into doing it, because I thought that the approach I was taking, which was pretty straightforward, sort of AP background, or my AP background, would hold up. And he said, well, that's why I've got you on there. I don't want any sort of a generic gossip column view of Las Vegas. I want the news, and that's what struck me about it. So that's been quite a interesting phenomenon. I've had about six or seven stories that have melted down the Rocky Mountain News. Melted down the Review Journal for up to 5 hours, and it's. The Review Journal just didn't have the capability to handle the story. But I'll tell you the one story that we really found out how under equipped we were in the online department was, every so often I'll tell my girlfriend Kara that this is a good story, or this is something I ought to follow up on. We went to a restaurant one night, and the steak was over $40. And I said, this is the first time I've ever seen steak go over $40 in Vegas. I think that's a story. I think that's a Drudge story. And I forgot to do it. Things got crazy. 2 weeks later, we go to another place, and it's $45 for a steak. And I said, I forgot. I've got to get on this. So the next day, I sent off emails to about five publicists their companies control the top properties in Vegas, and I got the menus back within 2 hours. Went through it. There was something like 12 over 40. So much for me really being on top of my beat. There was several at 190, which was Kobe, 175, 160. So I knew I had a really good story. What I didn't count on was Drudge. It might have been a little lighter news day, but he put it not just as the banner, but he splashed the skyline of Las Vegas. And then the headlines in as bold type as I've ever seen him run. The Gilded Age, $200 stakes in Vegas. And that story comes out on our website at 3 o'clock in the morning or 6 a.m. Eastern. And at 9 o'clock our time or noon Eastern, Rush Limbaugh led off his broadcast with it, melted our site down. Drudge came into town a couple weeks later, couldn't wait to tell us all about all the details. And he said, you know that at noon when your site melted down, you had 600,000 hits. You were on track to beat the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky blue dress story. So I count that among the great claims to fame in my life. So, but that's been incredibly helpful. It also didn't hurt that Matt, I think it might have been the same night, we were at Nine Steakhouse, this incredibly popular restaurant at the Palms, and Pete Rose walked by. Some of you will know, might be aware of this story. I covered the Reds from 73 until 1979, six seasons. They won two World Series, and it was really a huge, it was a great baseball team, and it was a very rideable, it's not quite the right word, but it was a team that had a lot of tremendous characters. Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, George Foster, Joe Morgan, and Concepcion. It had some real some great characters, a bunch of Hall of Famers, and so I had my good times with covering the team, and I on occasion I upset some of them, and I've always figured that you're not doing your job if that, you know, that goes with the territory, that sort of thing. And but one of the people that I had upset was, I'd heard that Pete was having contract problems, and so I got a big tip on the day that they were playing against Philadelphia in the playoffs, and I went to him and said, I hear that you've told your attorney to try to get the deal done, and that the Reds aren't budging off a certain number, and that you told him that you told him that if they feel you're too rich for their blood to trade me to Philadelphia. They're playing Philadelphia that day. So he adamantly would not comment. He refused to deny, refused to confirm it. I knew I had it, but he told me, is the last thing he said to me, and I was interviewing him in the shower because I did not want to lose the story to anybody else. The last thing he said to me was, I don't want to see that story come out. That story better not be written. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. If you wait until November, I'll give it to you in November. And I said, Pete, I know what that means. That means you're going to give it to the Cincinnati Inquirer, you're going to give it to the Cincinnati Post, and you're going to give it to me. And my guess is I might not get it at the same time as they're going to get it. And if my bosses find out that I made a deal to keep keep a lid on the story, and I lose this story, they're not going to be very happy at all. And he said, that story better not end up in, you know, going out there. So I sent it out, and the first thing that happened was a Philadelphia radio station called and said, can we talk to Norm Clark? I said, this is. And it was a lady that said, I'm the program director at such and such, the Philly station in, is this some kind of a hoax? Are you like a new reporter? Do you think you maybe got taken for a ride on this? There's nothing come out about this. And are you just trying to make a name for yourself? And I said, none of the above. I wrote it based on some solid information, and you can do whatever you want with the story. If you choose not to cover it, that's fine. But she said, I don't think we're going to report this. And I go, well, that's fine. You're entitled to do whatever you wish. So, but then the next day when I went to the ballpark, that night George Clooney's father, Nick Clooney, interviewed Pete, and Pete said that story is hogwash with a capital H-O-G. Norm Clark will not have the guts to go to the ballpark tomorrow. And so I did go to the ballpark tomorrow, and I waited until he went in the batting cage, and not while he was taking pitches, but during a break, I said, Pete, this is Norm. Heard you're looking for me, or something like that, because I didn't want him making a beeline toward me. I wanted it, in my mind, it was important that I went to him and gave him a shot to go after me, as opposed to him seeing me interviewing somebody in the dugout and then coming up and making a big scene. But he basically said, you better shut up or I'm going to punch out your blinking headlights. And there'll be a theme in this book of a couple other people that had colorful things to say about what they were going to do if I wrote something that they didn't like. Anyway, when I left here and went to Las Vegas, I thought that I thought, do I change at all? I'm definitely in a different sort of league as far as celebrity reporting and that sort of thing. Do I change at all? And I thought, do I get maybe snarkier, more smartass? And it came down to, I probably tried it a couple times in a couple stories and wasn't comfortable with it. And again, it really came down to it that I stuck with what I do best, and that is I'm basically a reporter, cut from the AP cloth of straightforward, talk to both sides and that sort of thing. And it's really served me well because when I got to Vegas, I was 86th from two places within less than a year. And the first one was the MGM Grand. It was Tyson fighting, and he it lasted one round. It was another fiasco, like most Tyson fights are. The round was called, and Tyson thought that the guy, who was a total tomato can that really didn't have any, you know, business being in the ring with him, Tyson thought that the guy took like a little stab at him right after the bell. So Tyson, being Tyson, comes up with over the head of the referee to beat the guy down. He's beating him down like this. I think that's where the word beat down came about. And the guy goes down, claims he's got a sore knee, and I would have done the same thing if I were in the ring with Mike Tyson, or within the same block of Mike Tyson. They called a fight. But they did something I'd never heard of, that I never knew existed in Las Vegas, and that is they called it a no contest, meaning all bets are off. If you bet on Tyson to win in less than two rounds, I mean, it's, if you had it, yeah, it's total, yeah, it's a total wash. And so I've just filed the worst story I've ever written on the celebrity scene at this, and I'd been there 3 weeks, and I just went, oh, I just wasn't prepared. It's my first fight in this job. And I just thought, God, I just wish there was something else I could write about. And suddenly, voila, there's Pierce Brosnan walking toward me with six security guards, all of me equipped with those Israeli, like, Secret Service kind of earphones. And I thought, take a shot. So he comes up, and I said, Pierce, I'm Norm Clark with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I wondered if I could ask you a couple questions about the fight. What'd you think? And he goes, well, what fight, for starters? He said, that was no fight. He said, let me just say this. If I were a paying customer, and I want to be very clear, I wasn't. In other words, they flew him in and comped him and all that. I would be demanding my money back. That was the biggest joke I've ever seen. And what has ever happened to our create the great sport of boxing. And maybe I asked another one. Those are verbatim. I remember those. I said, well, thank you very much. Then he did something that I don't think I have in this book. I should have put in under class acts. I said, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I've never had a celebrity do this before. He said, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. I said, Norm Clark, Las Vegas Review Journal. Puts his hand out and said, Norm, very nice to meet you. That just doesn't happen. Red carpet, it's like a sprint. They want to get by you as soon as possible so you can't say something that'll damage their brand, their clothing line, their sports drink or whatever. But if they've got something coming out, a new album or something, they'll be more than willing to talk to you for more than 20 seconds or so. But that was one of the chapters I'm really proud of in here. It's not all just bad behavior and meltdowns and that sort of thing. One chapter is about the best, about the people that I really admire. And I'll tell you the best one I have in there is I get a phone call and said, this is the, it was in an Asian accent, said, this is the Lotus of Siam, and we have celebrity sighting for you. I said, wonderful. Who did you have come in? They said, Smokey Robinson came in last night, had dinner, and when he finished dinner, he said nobody noticed him. He was with a group of friends, and his back was to the crowd, and they said that he walked out into the middle of the room and started singing his hits, five or six hits. The crowd went crazy, and he finished off, and as he left, everybody gave him a standing ovation. He got to the cashier and said, I want to buy everybody's dinner tonight, $3,000, left $500 tip for the rest of them. I don't get very many of those stories. I get more stories about Paris Hilton throwing up not in the restroom, let's put it that way. But that's one of the great ones. And the other one I absolutely love is Al Jarreau. I've never met him, never covered him before. Things you don't know about somebody until you get a story like this. This must be about 4 or 5 years ago, and he was appearing, and this couple went to see his show. And the lady was a huge fan, and she took a rose and was among many that put the rose on the stage. And when then he started playing, and he was maybe five, eight songs into it, she said to her husband, I'm not feeling well. I think I'm going to faint. And he helped her out, and she fainted in his arms. She'd had a stroke. He took her to the hospital. She was there for 2 or 3 days. Al Jarreau showed up the second day with a rose to give it to the family. And unfortunately, the lady didn't make it. But I thought that was just about the classiest thing. I mean, that just told me so much more about him than I want to know about a lot of the other people that I cover. But anybody want to sign books now?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Thank you again.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Meryl Marco, Anne Brashares, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on January 19th, 2009.